You're wondering about the music. It's Ian Anderson, 12 Divinities. Remember Jethro Tull?
I've heard of him, but I've never listened to him.
Jethro Tull is a group. Okay. He's a leader of the group. Plays school. Anyway, this is a... Usually it's more rock.
Now you've got me on recording thinking that Jethro Tull's a person.
You're safe. Just edit it.
That's right. No, no. Leave it. Paul would want reality. Thank you, everyone, for being here. My name is Matthew. I'm an alcoholic. I'm incredibly privileged just to kick this event off, celebrating Paul McKee's life. Like a lot of you, he had an incredible impact on me. And when I look at my life today, there's a stark contrast between what it would be and what it would not be if it weren't for Paul. He taught me a lot of things, and I could go on and on about all the things that he taught me. He taught me about radical availability. Like he was always there to pick up my phone call. But he also taught me that you can only help someone when they want to be helped. When I first met Paul, I kind of wanted to be helped. And there was something in this man that I saw that I really wanted, but I didn't necessarily want all of the externals in his life. It seemed like he spent a lot of time serving other people. It seemed like he lived a very simple life. It was not glamorous. Particularly in the last few years of his life, that was really when I knew him. And he changed me in a really, really profound way. And so many people today, you know, when they get to the latter years of their life, it's really kind of just counting down the time. And for Paul, it was this life just lived out of total self-gift until his very last breath. I could go on and on about all the things he taught me, but one of the most profound that he taught me was that silence can't be misquoted. And that God never makes mistakes, and so there must be a reason why he gave us two ears and one mouth. So I'm looking forward to sitting down and just listening to all of you share how Paul's impacted you and how he's changed your life, maybe in small ways or large. The floor is yours. Please share whatever is on your heart. Just know that in Paul, you have a very, very willing and generous audience. Do not be afraid to come up here.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Marilyn. I'm an alcoholic. About 21 years ago, I started with the early morning study group, and Paul was one of a handful of people that I listened to, I respected. I was so brand new, I had no self-respect, but I had respect for that man, and I heard things, and one of the things that he would say, he had said to me, is, Marilyn, you seem to have a lot of opinions. How about not sharing all of them? And I was not even insulted. In having said that, I was in and out for those first 3 years, and something had happened. I'd had this spiritual experience during the middle of my drinking, and I left my second drink. And I knew I had to pick up a white chip. But, of course, ego and pride said, well, I'm not picking it up at the early morning study group, where I came to every single morning. So I snuck off to another place. And I knew if I didn't get that white chip, I'm never coming back and I'm dead. Something in me knew that. And I'll be damned if Paul wasn't there at that other place. Paul and Bud, if y'all some of you know Bud. And the first thing I do is when I see both of them is go, oh, God. Yeah. But I sat there suffering, sweating, and when they said, does anyone need a white chip? I went up and I got it, and they clapped and they hugged me, and I just fell apart. So Paul has always had a way of saying things, and I listened. And over the years, and he brought bananas every morning, too. I thought, wow, I need some fruit. And, yes, just these things. So I'm forever grateful, and I'm glad that I was able to talk to Paul. I called him wherever he is staying in the final days, not knowing it was close to the end. And I just will always be grateful for him. And, y'all, thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Gary. I'm an alcoholic. At the early morning study group, there is typically a table that sits back there. When I would come in at that 7:30 meeting, Paul would already have been there, and most likely he'd be reading in the newspaper and so forth. He was just a stalwart. In some regards, to me, Paul was one of those people that if he was there, it was an official AA event. And there seemed to be multiple of them because there were so many places that he was. At the Triangle, 9 a.m. men's meeting, that was one of his haunts. At the Rock, he did the fourth and fifth sip workshop many years before I got involved with that. And then when Steve Orr would do sex and sobriety at 9:30 at night on Friday, many times that Paul would assist there. Paul and I were sponsored by the same fellows for Bill Roop was the first one until 2013 when Bill died, and then John Thomas was next. John's still ticking, but unfortunately can't be here. But we got to know each other that way. It was another arena was at the Ignatius House, where Bill Roop, that was his retreat, which met both in January. When we would do studies on the three books that were done by the originators before, the co-founders before there was a big book. This we would, one year we'd do Sermon on the Mount, one year we'd do the Book of James, and another year we'd do Henry Drummond's Greatest Thing in the World. And Paul would do leads there. And he just the thoroughness, the way that he could just simply express himself was always just simply, to me, what AA was about. And so in many regards, he was, I don't know how many people he ended up sponsoring. Heavy Hitters was another place that he was a regular member of, and an honored member there, and for many years as well. Somebody like him, in some regards, I'm not sure they make him quite like that anymore, but he'll be missed in every way, shape, and form. Thank you.
Jerry, I'm an alcoholic. I got up here so I can get this over with and enjoy this meeting. I am not one for sharing my tears for somebody. But I'll just share a couple of stories. First, how I met Paul. I've known Paul before he became my sponsor. Stan Parks was my very first sponsor. Larry Carson was my second. Hoyt Allison was my third. For 12 years, 10 years, somewhere around there. Then Bob Meadows became my sponsor. And the reason I'm naming all these people, because they told me when I first got here I didn't need to be unattended for any length amount of time. And I took it to heart. And thank God I did, because these men are the reason I'm here today. And that goes with Paul, too. So after Bob, and some of these were tragic endings. I mean, cancer and heart attacks, that's just what happens. They say when you first get here, you know, get your suit because you're going to go to a wedding or you're going to go to a funeral. So Bob was my sponsor. He passed away. And then Jim Hart became my sponsor. And he suddenly passed away. So I had known Paul from Rock Eagle, like was shared earlier. I met, he did a lot of the workshops down there. One we really got along with was the How Sober Is Your Pocketbook, kind of that topic, you know, because he was, a lot of my time spent with Paul was talking about money, finances, and that's the reason I'm also here today. So I went up to Paul, and I asked him to be my sponsor, and I told him my little history, and he's, and I said, you know, I really need a sponsor, and he says, well, Terry, let me think about it. And he didn't take long, and he says, of course, I'll be your sponsor. That's just the kind of men I grew up with here. Paul sponsored me for a good, almost, I think, 10 years. I can't put the timeline there, but I would, I would meet him. He was always short on the phone. I always wanted to talk on the phone, but he was always short. And I never forget it, on his answering machine, if you didn't get him, which was kind of rare, he'd always say, "I love you." He was not a man that had a hard time saying that word. So the other story I'm getting to is, and this is the one that had the largest impact on me. In 2008, I lost everything, financially, even spiritually. You know, it was a big crash in the economy, and I had to give up my daughter, my house, move to Gainesville to take care of my mother on a 10-acre farm, and we're both on food stamps, and I'm chopping wood for heat. And I'm 20 years sober, and I'm cussing the whole way. So anyway, I got up there, and I would come down here to do my homework at the NABBA Club because it's the only place I could get Wi-Fi really consistently, and Paul became my sponsor during that time somehow. But whenever I asked him I needed to meet, he would never have a problem setting up a time to meet. And when I got to see him face-to-face, we got to spend at least an hour together. As a matter of fact, I know that that's how I got to meet Josh here, because Josh would be leaving Paul, and I would be coming in to see Paul. So I don't know how many other people came through there, but he did sponsor a lot of people. And he had a great story. He always talked about the little brown whiskeys and the little sippy poo, and there's a lot of other stories out there. But the time that he really made the most impact on me was definitely the tough time. I was up there, and I got a grant to go to college, so I was going to college, and driving down here, I wasn't doing any work. I was in the landscape business, and that all crashed, and we had talked, and I didn't have the, you know, I could tell Paul anything. I could tell him anything. Two things he helped me the most in those categories were romance and finance, you know, go figure. But I always talked about the money, you know, and how I was going to get by. And the next day I would shop value meals in my little white truck. One day, I don't remember the circumstances, but we got through talking, and he pulled out in his hand a little wad of money and put it in my hand and said, "Here, take this." And, you know, people helped me a lot in those tough times. But that was $635. He must have been putting around somewhere, you know, because you just usually you keep zeros, denominations, or whatever. I don't know where he got the money, but I don't even know if he even counted it. But I definitely put it to good use. I ended up getting my college degree, going to work. We were still sharing, and he was helping me on finances. I started saving money. Paul said, "Interest never sleeps." He was great. Interest never sleeps. I started saving in 401k, and anyway, long story short, I was able to get a budget and buy a house and get my life back together, and it's just been incredible. But I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for men like Paul and all the men that I've been a sponsor to. I know me and Paul, we talked a lot. A lot of times it wouldn't even be about problems. It was about the things we miss, you know, the farm. We had a lot in common about the farm and all of that stuff. But glad to get that off my chest. I love that man. I loved all my sponsors. I love this program. And I hate to see him go, but I know he's in that big meeting in the sky. And he comes through every time you guys share about him. I get to hear a little bit more. So, thank you.
Josh, alcoholic?
Yeah.
I'll say a prayer Paul taught me. Breathe in God, breathe out me. You know, no human being, not even my own father, imparted the impact that Paul did on me. And I remember the first time I met him was at the Triangle Club. I was having some issues in the area of lust, and I remember giving him a call and asking him if it's possible for this thing to get better. And I remember him saying, yeah, I'm glad I got that monkey off of my back. And it was like the light of the Lord just reached through that phone and touched me in the heart. And I cannot tell you what happened in that moment, but it was a supernatural peace that was imparted that I knew that freedom was possible. So I met him at Triangle, and he told me his story. I thought my life was, you know, a wreck. He told me his story. I thought, man, I'm not that bad. You know? Thank goodness. The buck stops here. He led me to, he became my sponsor then and led me to freedom in that area. Led me to, then became my sponsor in AA and two different programs. He ended up leading me to my faith tradition as well, and even sponsored me into the church that I'm a part of. And, you know, he definitely earned his commission. So, and, you know, one thing I learned from Paul is truly, you know, I do think that someone, I mean, he's my new favorite saint. And I think that, you know, if people in Rome knew about Paul's character, they could be celebrating him at St. Peter's Square. But it's just a wonderful reminder with Paul, the greatest legacy is the love that you give away. Right? That's the only thing you can take with you to heaven. There's no U-Hauls behind hearses. I just know that everybody I touch in my life will have his thumbprints all over them. You know, and I think that's the hope that we have. At the end of his life, I had the privilege of bringing him communion quite regularly. Every day. And it was just such a gift, the man who led me to Jesus. I got to bring Jesus to him at the end. And, you know, Paul was still sponsoring me at the end of his life. You know, I think a lot of times I could look and, you know, you could look at someone in that state and say, well, you know, their best years are behind them. What are they really living for? But Paul taught me, I would say, potentially arguably more, you know, that last month that he was in hospice care than his entire life. You know, he taught me how to suffer well, how to surrender well, how to have radical trust in God, and still love other people unconditionally, despite being in a circumstance that you would probably give anything to not be in. You know, how to hand over the keys of your life to someone else and surrender everything, every attachment that you had. With that being said, you know, I'm just so grateful for Paul in my life. Every good thing I have today is a result of his thumbprints. And I'll close with something he taught me. He said, Josh, you can never give graciously unless you can learn to receive graciously. Thank you.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Warren. Paul sponsored me 25 years. And if I cry, I don't care. I'm just going to cry. I was there the day he passed. I was there with him in hospice every day with Josh. And Paul had he was big on investing, and he taught a lot of guys about finance. And every time we would talk about investing, he would say, Warren, let's always remember to invest in what's important, the most important investment. And he'd always say, Warren, people. People are what we should invest in. And I want to tell you, I am a product of Paul McKee's investment. According to him, he made me acceptable for polite society. I took my dad to his first AA meeting at 80 years old, and he was drunk my whole life. God, that feels good. I had told Paul a story about being 11 years old and just decided I was going to disappear for 3 days. And when I came back, my dad didn't even know I was gone. Never even said, where were you? And I was just so happy because I figured he was going to kick the shit out of me. And he didn't, because he didn't even know. He wasn't even aware. And, you know, we grew up in a household where the word I love you was never used. and I was just fine with that. And I got out of treatment my first time at Peachford, and I told the, you know, the therapist there, and he said, well, maybe you should call your dad and tell him you love him. And I was like, I'm 26, and we had never used that word in our house. And I remember calling my dad on the phone saying, Dad, I just want you to know I love you. And literally, long pause, and my dad says, I do you too, and he hung up the phone. He didn't even know what to say to me. And I told Paul that, this is not an exaggeration. Paul called me every day for 10 years between the Wall Street Journal and his 7:30 NAVA meeting just to tell me he loved me. And the sad part is it took me forever to believe him. I can't even begin to tell you the lessons that man taught me. Cannot even, it's like, I remember I lived down near Serenby, and they had a playhouse that they do. And the director of the playhouse was a drunk, and they knew I was in AA, and they asked me what, like, he was a super talented guy, smart, well-educated. And they'd find him sleeping on the street. And I'm like, okay, sounds familiar. He probably, you know, he's one of us. And they asked me if I would do an intervention with him, and I went and got some people, and God decided he wanted to stay sober. What he wanted was to keep his job. And he started calling me pretty regular. And there was one thing about him, and please don't take any offense to this, but he was gay, and he was flamboyantly gay. And he wore little scarves and painted his nails, and we would go to coffee, and people would be looking at us. And after probably 4 or 5 visits with him, like, I really wanted to defend my sexuality and say, look, like, it, you know, this isn't what it looks like. And I remember calling Paul and telling Paul, and long pause, and Paul says, Warren, you're at an interesting crossroads. You got to decide if you care what God thinks or man thinks. And he said, I'm sure you'll make the right decision. And that has been, like, I've developed the art of I don't care what you think. Like, I truly want to do what God would have me to do. So, I can tell you he changed the course of my life. He changed the course of my son's life. My son called him Grandpa. Every day, me and my son talk on the phone, and me and my daughter talk on the phone. We never, ever hang up without telling each other we love each other. I can talk to my son 5 times, and every time he calls me, before he hangs up, he'll tell me I love you. That's from Paul McKee. I don't know if any of you guys ever called his cell phone, but that thing said, and it said it for years, he would say, this is Paul McKee, I love you. He just had that understanding, man. There's, you know, especially for a broken guy like me who came from where I came from. I'll tell you one. I could go on. Like, y'all drag me off here whenever you want. But I was thinking about, I had met Paul at Rock Eagle, and we had talked several times. And I live on a little farm down south of the city. And I had just moved down there, and I really disconnected. And I was miserable. And I had decided I wanted to change the way I felt. And I called somebody. And what I did not realize at the time, Paul's phone number was 770-662. And the guy that I called, his number was 770-662. And the guy says, I'm going to call you back in 10 minutes. I said, okay. in that 10-minute period, I had not spoke to Paul McKee in a couple months. And he called and said, "Warren, what are you doing?" And I answered the phone. I was like, and he said, "I've just been thinking about you. How many people have heard this? And I just want you to know I love the dickens out of you." And I started crying on the phone. And he said, "Where are you?" And I told him everything. He drove 40 miles down to my house, and he sat at my kitchen table and held my hand. Ah, and said, "We'll get through this." And I got through. So, my only hope is that I get to continue to give away what's given to me. Thanks.
Hey, y'all, my name's Jewel. I'm an alcoholic. Paul's just a good friend of mine. He didn't sponsor me, but he so said a lot of stuff that I kept. That breathe in God and breathe out me thing is something I do. I don't just recite it. A few weeks ago, we were down in Fayetteville, thereabouts, to Paul's church. One of the cool things that I got to do was hang out with all of the men that Paul had profoundly affected. And the cool thing was that I was one of them. I was one of them. Me and Paul had a lot of things in common, the retreat. Paul was an active member of my home group, the Heavy Hitters Men Group. Alcoholics Anonymous meets at 5 on Saturday. All you guys that need some place to go in an hour or two, y'all welcome. But I was just sitting there thinking about, you know, just us, how we, this road to happy destiny that we trudge, and the things and the people we find as we do it, none of them seem to end up being disappointments. And Paul was definitely, I'm not even going to even use him in that sentence. Paul's on the other side of that equation, completely on the other side of that equation. Paul was more of an encourager. I don't care where you are or where you were, where I was in recovery, he said things to help me. He's never said anything. Even if he wasn't talking to me, it helped me. You know what I'm saying? It's just amazing how we come here. We don't even know if we want to be here. Someone comes into our lives, saves it, and then we start meeting other people just like them, all over the place. You know, and we never know who is being a positive influence on who in here. We bump into each other and we fall in love with each other. And we, I'm just thinking about how much of an effect Paul has had on me, and we were nowhere near as close as him and Warren, or him and Josh. You know what I'm saying? Him and Gary. I was nowhere near as close to them guys as Paul McKee, as they were to Paul McKee. But Paul McKee was my friend. He always smiled at me. He always had something wry and witty to say. You know, I'm from a white whiskey's family. And he's from a brown whiskey's family. How ironic is that, right? But we always lifted each other up. And I could never lift as high as Paul could. He always lifted me a little higher than I could lift him. Even in his last days, I had to pry to find out what his condition was. I only pried because I heard something about his condition. And if I didn't say anything, or if I didn't inquire, or if I didn't know, I wouldn't have known Paul was even sick. I wouldn't even known that, man. He never put himself before me. How about that? He was always willing to help me more than he needed for me to help him. So, I won't say I love Paul, but I will say I love y'all. Thank y'all for being Paul's friend.
Hey, everybody. My name's Jason. It's good to see you guys. I hope I'm not going to do too much storytelling, because I just want to say a couple of small little things that I've thought of in the last few weeks. But I have to say a little bit. There's a song that says, "Thank you, God, for your sunlight. Thank you, God, for your moonlight. Thank you, God, for your starlight. Thank you, God, for your guiding light." And this man was that for me. This man was God's guiding light in my life, man. And I think of him when I hear that song now. There's a piece in AA about that. It says that something about attraction rather than promotion, that's how we work. And Paul, he got a handful when he got me on his plate. I had just left the Fulton County Jail after a long time. I had just stepped up out of a lot of very dramatic stuff, IV drugs, prostitution, homelessness, and I was just a churning mess. And there was a man in the 4 o'clock meeting at Triangle, and Paul was talking, I didn't know it, but he was talking about one of Terry's sponsors. I forget his name right now, but I heard Paul discussing a friend of his who was going through something. And I'm sitting here remembering it 20 years later because the peace in that man's voice got to me. It was something that I certainly didn't have anywhere in my world, just this calmness and this peace. And you know, when I think about attraction rather than promotion, I think of like a bug and a light, you know, flying. Just like, I can't stay away. And I knew that peace in that man's voice was something I needed. And I got his number and I started calling that man. And sooner or later he said, you know, there's this thing called the Atlanta Men's Workshop, and I think you should be registered. In fact, I think he might have said, I already gave him your name. And I kept calling him every day, and one day he said, maybe you ought to start writing before we go out there, and I did, and I called him, and I kept calling him, and we got out there, and it wasn't until I had completed my fifth step with him that the word sponsor ever came up, because it was far more, it wasn't a formal thing, it wasn't like I was even doing anything, I was just drawn to this man, and I would feel better when I hung up the phone. You know, and he would say some stuff that I thought was just literally, I thought the man might be kind of nuts. You know, when he would sign off and say, "And remember, me and the Lord loves you, buddy." I'm like, what world are you in, man? But it wasn't the world I had been in. But I needed to keep calling that man, and I did keep calling him, man. And, I remember the time I called him and I said, "Debbie, this girl I lived with through all of it, you know, and who I was probably talking about her all the time because I was just rah, 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 rah." I called him one morning. I said, "Paul, they picked up Debbie on the streets in some weird town, and she's wandering drunk in the streets, and now she's in jail. What? It's a catastrophe." And Paul said, "Good." And I had no idea it was good. And then, you know, not long after that, he just, without even thinking about it, drove me all the way to Columbus, Georgia and back so I could visit with her. And she just celebrated 19 years. When I was about to have a child. I mean, up until 12 years ago, I always said that the only thing I'd ever done right was to not breed. But when I was about to become a dad, 11 years ago, I remember I said to Paul something about not knowing what to call her, what to name the baby. Paul says, "Well, how about Sweet Pea?" We didn't choose that, but we still happily think of it all the time. And when I heard that Paul was gone, the first thing I thought of was, I don't know how long ago, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I was hanging out with some guys outside the chapel at the Rock, and someone come up and said, "Paul McKee, by golly, I ain't seen you in a couzes. What you been up to the last couple years?" And Paul says, "Oh, I've just been practicing my harp playing." And I was like, "What?" But I suspect he's probably playing pretty well. There was one other thing. Oh, yeah, this here today. I don't think this particular gathering would have happened if he had done anything less than he did to bring it about, taking his leave of us. When he was maybe 15 years ago, he was about to turn 25, and I hadn't really figured, I may not have even noticed that he likes to talk on the phone just a little while, because I would just call and go and go and go, and it took years for me to notice that he was ready to get off after about 10 seconds. I thought, how, 25 years, you're about to have 25 years of sobriety? Well, what are you going to do about it? Where are you getting cakes at? Blah, 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 blah. And I just couldn't stand the thought that he wasn't doing anything, so I started putting together a little 25th party for him downstairs in the basement here. And poor Paul, I think it caused him more stress, worrying about whether someone would find out and feel uninvited. And he would call me and say, "Oh, please, do you have this number? Do you have this number? Please make sure." And all we did was boil some hot dogs and sit around for about an hour. And I remember him looking at me and saying, "Thank you, thank you." And I just, stuff like that, these weird little moments that I'm just not going to forget about the man. I'm probably one of the few people in this room who ever successfully got sideways with Paul McKee, because I suspect it takes a lot to do that. But boy, I would just, you know, I had this thing where I didn't have a lot of impulse control, and I really demanded satisfaction. And if I was uncomfortable, I needed to tell my sponsor. And I would just call Paul and just, and one time, I don't remember what he did, but I think he finally said, well, something that just crushed me. Probably something like, "Well, maybe you should express your many opinions a little less." And I responded to that by just not calling him or doing anything for, it wasn't that long, a couple weeks. And boy, was I carrying that grudge. And he called me one day and he said, "Jason, I don't know how or why, but I think I have hurt you very deeply somehow. And I want you to know that I didn't want to do that, and I love you very much." The peace that I found in that man's voice, I think it turns out it's linked to a kind of an infinite reservoir of joy. And I live in that now. I live in that joy these days, and I'm just very, very, very grateful for the God and light that he brought into my life. Thanks.
My name's Scott. I'm an alcoholic. Paul was not my sponsor officially, but we talked an awful lot after meetings. As with others, when I would call Paul, he would say, "Well, it's so great to hear from you. It's been nice. Goodbye." And I'd say, "Paul, wait a minute, time out, hold on." He said, "Yes, what was it you wanted to talk about?" And I'd tell him, he said, "Okay, well, let's talk about that sometime. Goodbye." Paul just wouldn't talk with me on the phone, and that turned out to be a gift for both him and for me, because he told me, he showed me, you got to seek out people. Don't hide by the phone. Don't hide behind a text. Not unlike others, there are many things that Paul helped me with. I'll just share a couple, three actually. when I was working with the big company downtown, one evening I was leaving and the lobby was empty and things like that, and Paul was there, and there was a flower delivery truck van parked, and Paul had just delivered some flowers. And the first time I'd seen him outside of an AA meeting, and I said something to him, we talked a little bit in the lobby, and I asked him, he said, is that your truck? Or he said, I got to go, that's my truck, or something like that. And I don't know how it came up, but in the course of that, he said, well, just be aware, you know, do your job, and that's good. And he let me know, and some, you know, I can't remember how it came up, but he said, I don't take any tips ever. I said, don't take any tips. So I know you're working for minimum wage, and what's the deal? He said, well, if I start taking tips, I'll begin to expect them. And if I begin to expect them and somebody doesn't give me a good enough tip, I'll have a resentment. And then I'll have to pray for them. And he said, it's just not worth it, so I'd rather not take the tip. That was Paul. Paul was the guy who casually said to me two things that had a profound impact. One of them was, Paul said, I needed to learn how to quit looking good but living dirty. And I thought, boy, I relate to that, unfortunately. And he told me about patience. He said, go to the longest line in a grocery store. So every time you buy anything, go to the longest line. And then be sure you thank the cashier. He said, drive the speed limit everywhere you go for one full year. So you may not learn to drive better, but you'll learn about patience. I hated that assignment. I absolutely did. It drove me nuts. Still, I have trouble with those things. But the most important thing Paul ever did for me was something happened in my life when I was drinking that I had deep regret about. And I had done more than one four-step bit about it, fifth step. I'd done multiple six and seven steps on it. In my faith tradition, I would even addressed it that way, and it was still just eating my lunch. So one day at the early morning meeting, when they said, if anybody needs to talk to somebody in private, please raise your hand, and I did, Paul came out, and he said, what is it? We talked about that. Paul helped me put that to bed. I won't tell you all the details, but it was a godsend. Paul was a godsend. So as he would say to me frequently, he said, just keep on doing it. Give those steps a kick, a lick, and a whack. And he taught me to do that. So thank you all for letting me share.
Hey, my name is Jeff, and I'm a real alcoholic. I don't know. I never went with Paul to a meeting here at NABA, but I know at Triangle, he had a great sense of humor. And I did like Josh using one of Paul's, let's say, non-humorous, more serious sayings. Breathe in God, breathe out my name. But he also, he just had a great sense of humor. And I think that's part of what was so attractive to so many people. And I remember, I'd like to remember more of his sayings, but one that I always loved, the mind cannot absorb what the butt cannot endure. That's a great one. Anyhow, thanks for letting me see you.
Hello, everybody. My name is Andres. I am an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be here and honor Paul. I met Paul in the class and 12-step group when we were at the Scott Day Mill. And he had just moved from Virginia. I was new, and he had been sober like about a year. I stayed in Claston, became my group, and he moved on, and I think he came to Nava. But every now and again, he will visit us. And we will talk. Okay, he always had to ask me, what's your name again? I said, my name is Andres. And he said, okay, Andre. He couldn't say my name for nothing. Time went on. About, I don't know, 12, 15 years later, I got in trouble with money. I owe a lot of money. It was driving me crazy. And I didn't know what to do. So like a good alcoholic, I figured I was going to go bankrupt, you know. And one day I was in a meeting with Paul, and he shared that he had been where I was, okay, and that through this program he was able to eventually pay his debt, and he didn't have to go bankrupt. So after the meeting, I said, hey, Paul, I told him my story. But I also told him that I had already made up my mind that I was going to go bankrupt. And he says, well, Andres, Andre, did you spend that money? And I said, well, yes. Then you have to pay it back, he said. I said, well, I don't see how, Paul, to be honest with you. He said, well, have you tried it? He said, well, listen, he said, I'm going to guide you on what I did, and let's see what happens. So he gave me hope. You know how we are? We caught ourselves in places where there is no way out, and that's where I was with the money. So I started doing, you know, what he asked me to do, chunk all my credit card, da, 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 you know. To make the story short, after about 5-6 years, I paid off the debt. And I could not believe it myself. All right. It's like, wow. So we became pretty tight, you know. I moved out west for about 13 years, and we kept in touch all those years. Then I came back. He became my sponsor. But he also talked about him, you know. Sometimes I didn't know who was sponsoring who. Very loving and understanding, but also very direct to what the problem might be and to the solution, okay? So after one of my rantings, he says, well, Andres, seems like all your problems coming out of your mouth. It's come from what you say. So I'm going to ask you to zip it. That's what he's saying. He's like, oh, Jesus. That's going to be difficult, Paul. Well, you want to stop having all these problems? You have to shut up, buddy, you know. That is what is happening with you. It was a pleasure to be with him. You know, we met for years. For many years, he used to go to my house. Every week we met. And then he couldn't drive in the dark, so I started coming here, and we met in the basement. And we had a great relationship, you know. We kind of, at the end of his life, I didn't know where he was, you know. And I kind of lost touch with him. I didn't see him at the end, but I always will be grateful for our relationship, you know. Anyway, as he will say at the end of our sessions, keep the faith.
Hey, my name is Liz. I'm an alcoholic. And I feel like I'm representing just like another bozo on the bus in the AA clubhouse of people who loved Paul McKee. But I just so appreciate what everybody has shared about these really personal memories, and it's, you know, I think in my own case with Paul and I both got sober in 1985, so we shared this long-term sobriety thing and, like, birthdays that are very close together, and we'd seen each other for years and years and years, but then I started to see Paul in other 12-step meetings, because by then I had realized that I was a whack-a-mole-aholic, and I had more problems than just alcohol that needed to be addressed, and I was looking for treating these things with the same spiritual program, and there was Paul, so it felt like we shared this kind of, you know, just deep reliance on the 12 steps, but that sort of helped with this sense of, you know, it almost felt like a classmate, you know, and like I felt lucky when Paul and I were in the same class. And we did find each other in the same class quite a bit. But I his prayer about breathing in God and breathing out Liz has been, you know, one of those spiritual gifts that will always be with me. And I mean, I think I would describe Paul as he's entered into that sort of home group that lives in my heart forever of alcoholics who have helped me. And I just want to thank you guys all for sharing more about him today. And, you know, it just adds to the beauty of it all. Thank you.
My name's Robin and I'm an alcoholic. You know, sitting here thinking about everything, and you know, it's something someone else told me once when I was asked to do this at a eulogy for someone, and they told me, you know, and I knew she was dying, she said, just remember, Robin, it's not all about you. And as an alcoholic, you know, that's hard to do. I would meet Paul here at Nevada before the 7:30 meeting, and one thing I can say is that Paul was always present. He was not somewhere else like me, scattered around everywhere. The first thing he'd say to me in the morning would be, "What's going on?" You know, and no matter what it was, he had some kind of example that always made it look like that I fit in. You know, I separated myself from people for a long time, and you know, Paul saying "I love you" meant a lot, as somebody else has already said. You know, I didn't understand that either. You know, something that I didn't hear a lot, especially from a man. And you know, and that was pretty cool. I have, you know, it's I've heard a little bit about Paul with everybody here, so it's sort of like Paul's here. And the other thing I'd like to say about this is that, you know, sometimes when I think about what's going to happen when, you know, I go somewhere, knowing that Paul might be there makes it a lot easier. Thanks.
My name's John. All of a sudden, it's hard to say. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic. Paul and I were friends. Loved him. Just what he did with other people was terrific. His humility was cool. For a period of time, we were eating downtown somewhere in Midtown, and we had meetings at a playhouse down on 10th Street. And we lined up Paul McKee to tell his story. So I'm talking to Gus. Some of you know Gus. He's a creative guy, and he'd be here today if his back wasn't hurting him so bad. And so we're talking pictures and whatnot, and so we start picking up the Paul McKee sayings, brown whiskey and the brown chair and the variety of other expressions that Paul had. And so Gus made up these posters. So in the middle of Paul's story, as we're doing this thing down at 10th Street, somebody's walking by, Paul said brown whiskey, and somebody like Vanna White walks by with the gun. And Paul's horrified by this. And so we see him at Triangle, I think Saturday morning after that, and we're giving him all these posters, and I could see after that was done, he took the posters, he was crumpling them up, he was mad as hell, and stuffed them in the dumpster. But that reflected the humility of the guy and the gift. And, the sense of humor was always there. And you learned it was a brief conversation with Paul, particularly towards the end. I love those. So God bless the man. And he's looking at us today, I'm sure.
Hi, I'm Rachel. I'm an alcoholic. So when I first started sponsoring women, I was on fire. You know, I was going to go save everybody. And I had this first sponsee. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but she called me one time. She went to the 7:30 a.m. meeting, and she called me one time, and she was so upset because this gentleman had, in the middle of her sharing about her the trauma of her religion, he stopped the meeting and said, "We do not talk about sectarian religion in AA." So she ran home and called me, and I was like, oh, I'm going to go up there and talk to him. Like, how dare he say that to my sponsee? So I go, I got here a little early because I knew Paul. I came in, he was sitting there with his bananas, and I said, I want to talk to you about something. And so I shared with him what had happened, and he taught me that day about the 10th tradition, which I had not known anything about yet. Because I was new, I didn't know what I was doing. And then I got to go home and teach my sponsee about the 10th tradition. So I'm grateful for that. But even a few days after that, I ran into Paul somewhere, and he came to me, and he said, I want you to know that I learned a lesson from that, too. So I didn't know him that well, but I did spend some time with him in meetings, and I'll be forever grateful for that morning with Paul. So thanks.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Kenny. I'm sorry. I'm petrified of speaking in public, so you'll have to excuse me, but I just wanted to say that Paul is 100% the most inspirational and successful man, human beings I've ever met in my life, and I'm honored to have had him in my life. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Jonathan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
everyone. I do know when I got down to Atlanta 7 years ago, this last month, Paul was here, and he made an impression like he did with so many other people, and I was pretty scared at that moment. A lot of unresolved issues in my life that you people here helped me to walk better with. I'd get here early, and I'd stay after the meeting because that's what you told me to do, and I was scared to death I was going to go out and drink. And he was always here. And so I learned after a while where he sat, and I just sat next to him because I wanted to soak up everything that that man had to say. And it was just these little things that everyone else has shared that touched me in moments that I needed it. And he had that gift. He told me, and I'll mess it up, you guys can remind me after this what it was, but he said I had to come to terms with three or four things, one being the my parents' mortality, the faith of my childhood, and my mortality. And those seemed way too large for me at the time that he told me that, and I kind of, a lot of the things with the G-O-D word at that time, I just kind of brushed off or made me bristle. But as life happened and went on, I found that he was absolutely right for me with those things, and he helped me with those things. When I found out that he passed, there was that joy that other people have talked about. I never had that with death. Death was a terrifying thing. Couldn't deal with it. Again, life happens, and you learn new ways. I just nonstop been thinking about... what we have the ability to do in here, how we can go. I definitely don't do it the way I want to, but since his passing, like, I find myself falling short again, but realizing that there's hope to do more and to show up in that way that Paul did for all of us, right? So I'm grateful for that. I have that. The other thing besides the sayings, again, I've never seen anyone love like that. He said he loved me. I didn't have a problem with that. I enjoyed that. I could, that would pass around easily. But I used to sit next to him at that table, and he'd get up to start shuffling off after he set his chair at the 7:30 meeting with his Wall Street Journal in his hand and his bottle of water, and he'd just lean over, tap me on the shoulder, and say what he said to other people, which was, you know, me and the Lord love you. That's, the Lord was not something I grew up with. I had a lot of animosity with that. But because of his joy, because of his love, he helped open up something that I was not ready for at that time, but has grown. And for that, I'm grateful. So thanks.
My name is Mary, and I'm an alcoholic, and it's hard for me to get up here. When I came into the program and I stopped drinking, the first thing that came to me, I had drank because of fear, just absolute fear, panic, difficulty living life. And through the years, it got better, and then I got really sick, And it all came back, and it came back rough. And I had been in the meetings with Paul McKee before, but and he was in he was at the Ignatius House with us. He was a lot of places, and he helped a lot of men. And I thought, what a wonderful man he is. But you know, he's a man's man, so I really didn't get to know him that well. And I started going to Three Legacies, which was over on La Vista Road, and my anxiety gave me enough ability to drive back and forth to Three Legacies. And Paul started showing up there, and I was sharing there as honestly as I possibly could. They'd ask me to do a meeting, I'd do a meeting on fear, you know, because it was what I was dealing with. And Paul would start stopping me after the meeting. He says, "You okay?" And I said, "Yeah, Paul." I said, "You've been around all these men all these lives. Do you know how to deal with fear? Do you ever have that?" He goes, "I deal with it every day of my life." And I didn't want to share that because I know you all, but he was just so wonderful. And I said, "Well, what do you do?" And he said, "I pray." He said, "I get in the car and I pray and I just drive." And every single day he would just, every single week that I was there, he would meet up with me and he would say, "You doing okay, honey?" And I would say, "Yeah." And he says, "How's that man of yours?" And he asked me how Gary was. And he would just say, "Let's walk out to the car." He said, "You okay?" And I'd say, "Okay." And he would say, "Let's pray," you know. And he would just pray for just a second. And we get in the car and we drive off. And I'll never forget that. And I was sitting there and I thought, I got to share that about this man. He even ministered to me. And I think it was getting close to when he wasn't feeling well, because I could tell that he was struggling a little bit. So anyway, thanks for letting me share that. That meant a lot to me. Thanks.
I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic. We have a little website called AABlueChipSpeakers.org, and a lot of you guys have told your stories, and you're up there. Paul's story is on our 2012 page. It's quite a great story. It's worth a listen to again. If you want to spend a little time with him, it's always there for you.
Okay. The power and the glory.